Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Ms. Aaron from South College.
Hello, my name is Aaron. I'm an alcoholic. I guess I'll start off by saying my sobriety date, which is January 21st, 2009. And I have a home group, South College Speaker Group. It's a speaker meeting just like this. And it's awesome. And it's one of the first really good encounters I had with AA was a speaker meeting. I really, really got a good vibe from the people and the message that I was looking for because I was done drinking. And I was ready to change my life. I was tired of getting in trouble. And I just didn't think life needed to be like that anymore. And I was willing to start facing the consequences and cleaning up my past. But I knew through past experiences I needed to get a sponsor and start the steps. The third thing I'm supposed to say is I have a sponsor. Her name is Chris. And I've had the privilege of sponsoring girls. It's amazing, and it teaches you more about yourself, and it teaches you more about this program. I noticed as I started to take girls through, I wanted to know more about this program because I want to share with them what was shared with me the best I can. And then I do that through reading the big book and talking to my sponsor and going to meetings and being active in AA. Also, I'm supposed to say a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. So what it was like, I guess we all start out with our childhood. I had a wonderful mom, wonderful dad. They had me pretty young. My mom was pretty young. So that explains some things, you know. She didn't get to have some of the experiences that maybe, you know, other people got to have before they had children and get married. But she did a wonderful job, and she showed me what being selfless was. And she still does today. My father, as I got older, I realized, I was very young, so I didn't know, oh, my dad's an alcoholic. But, dad's drinking and driving. I heard on the TV show, you're not supposed to drink and drive. You know, daddy don't drink and drive. Dad's got his bag packed. Where are you going, daddy? Dad's going away because dad got another DUI. And I was very young, so I didn't know, but I knew something was up. There was always alcohol around, there was always people around partying, and there was just, my mom was always stressed out, it was just, something was up with alcoholism, but I didn't know what it was. I just knew, there's alcohol always around, mommy's not happy, mom and dad are fighting. Dad's very disoriented a lot. He was able to pay the bills and work, but he was not consistent the way he should have been with his family, I feel, because of alcoholism. Said I would never be like my dad. I'll never be like my dad. So that's how I thought when I was younger. I'm never going to be like him. I'm never going to be like him. I'll never drink and drive. I'll never drink. I'm going to be awesome. I'm going to be in control, you know, like we think, like alcoholics think. That's never going to happen to me because, why, I don't know. I didn't know that it would happen to me. That's kind of how my childhood was like. I had two brothers. We all got along really great. We never really fought except like some teasing or, you know. Started school. And in school, I got sick a lot when I was little. So I would miss school, miss classes, and always feel like I wasn't a part of what the other students were like because I was always missing school. Excuse me. This is like my first time like standing at a podium and I'm very nervous. But it's not my first time like, you know, talking to alcoholics that I do have unconditional love for, and that's the major thing I told myself tonight, that these are people that I have something in common with and that I do love, and they showed me love. So I know we're supposed to talk about our childhood and, you know, what happened before. I don't always feel comfortable talking about it, but, you know, it explains things, I guess, and it helps you relate to the person that's speaking. So, I guess more like we have the family, parents, dad, alcoholism. That's something I related to. Daddy was my favorite. I love my dad, you know, and then I came to find out more why. He got sober. He came to AA, and he said he got to step 11. He stayed sober. He's been sober for 18 years. He decided to go to church and do more of the spiritual side with church, but he's not necessarily working with other alcoholics right now. So I don't know if he's suffering for that. I don't know. But I try to be there for him as a daughter. I try to be a good daughter to him. And, you know, I'll text him, I love you, Dad. Hey, how you doing, Dad? You know, his new project is going to Nigeria to do solar paneling. We're just alcoholics. We have all these dreams, and what we need to do is be consistent and follow through and not give up. You know, I know a lot about giving up through even before drinking and after drinking, you know, always putting things off in school, always putting things off, staying, you know, up at midnight when I was younger, trying to get my homework together and say, now I'm just going to go to sleep. The next day I'd make up some excuse to my teacher. Oh, it was my dad's weekend. I left my stuff at my dad's house. I didn't really leave my stuff at my dad's house. I didn't do it. And I took advantage of the teacher and lied to her so she would feel bad, because none of the other kids in my class were really, had divorced parents or, you know, didn't have, like, the time to split up or whatever. And so she felt bad for me. And she actually ended up giving me an A one time. And I never turned in, like, a last assignment. But, I mean, I was a good kid. I liked to be involved with student council. I love being involved with something. That's why I love AA, because I love being involved. There's always something to do in AA. There's always somebody to help. There's always just stuff to get involved with, and that's why I love it. And I love staying busy with AA. Also, I find that we need to be there for our families, too. And it even says that in the big book, that in the beginning, we want to be very a lot invested in AA, and I almost think that's what we're supposed to do. So we can meet, be a part of the fellowship, start meeting people, start learning what it's all about, and then start being there for our families, because we start making amends and we start learning how to be a good family member. And that's what this program gave me too. It's taught me how to be a good family member and be there for my family. And you know, I'm jumping ahead. I need to stick to my childhood. And I really do. I'm very nervous. Childhood, I don't like talking about myself. I really like talking about this program. But we need to talk about ourselves. We need to find where we're wrong. We need to not point our finger at everybody else. And that's what we do also. So, you know, through school, got through, decent kid. I was a good kid. I liked being involved in church, but I always felt like I was, I guess, always wanted to be different or be not with the rest of the girls. Or, on the other hand, I wanted everybody to be happy, everybody together, and that's not reality. I wanted to do what you wanted to do instead of finding out who I was and what I wanted to do. Not realizing the importance of sticking with things and following your own dreams and not giving up on yourself. But really what had happened was when high school started, and that's when I tasted alcohol, and that's when I didn't care anymore, didn't care about principles anymore, because I think I was, for the most part, a principled kid. You know, I lied or, you know, cheated. I think, you know, I stole, but realized that was wrong. I didn't do it consistently. Once high school started and I tried alcohol, everything else, I didn't care anymore. And it was progressive. Like, at first, you know, I tasted it. Wow, this is awesome. My friends came up to me, Aaron, what's wrong with you? You know, nothing. Leave me alone. Like, I don't have to be nice to you anymore. I'm in my own little world. Like, very, very alcoholic mind. It did wear off, and I kind of forgot about it. And then later on, you know, another party, more alcohol. Everybody else is doing it, I'll do it too. I react differently. The next weekend, I'm saying, where's the alcohol? My friends are like, Aaron, that's my parents' alcohol. We can't have that. I'm like, why not? Why can't we have it? Like, I want to drink. I want to drink all the time. And it just started taking over my life. School was no longer important. I got by in school. I got C's. after I found alcohol, I didn't care anymore. If I got it done, I got it done. I was cheating off you to get my classwork done because I put partying ahead of everything else. And I took advantage of people for that. I took advantage of that girl that did her homework and did well in school. You know, I liked her and everything, but I took advantage of her because she's looking at me like, well, why didn't you do it? You know, you got to party this weekend. I didn't. I did my homework. I did what I was supposed to do. And, you know, I just took advantage of people to get by. And, you know, I got my license first out of all my friends. I got it the summer before, like sophomore year or something like that. So everybody was like, where are we all going? We would pack like 8 people in my car legally. I probably could only have 5. And pack some alcohol in the car too. And somehow I got around for a little while without getting in any trouble, without getting in any car accidents. We got by, and girls, and then, you know, that's how I got my friends. You know, because Aaron has a car, and we're going to a party, and we're doing this, and we're doing that. And I don't care. I got a 40 with me, I'm fine. You got some alcohol for me, I don't care where we're going. We had fun. I had fun doing that, because I didn't realize that I was putting other people's lives in danger, that I was just, who knows what my mom's thinking at home or what I'm putting my mom through. I didn't care what I was putting other people through. This was what I wanted and what I enjoyed and what took everything else away. And so I continued to do that. Somehow I got through school. And I only applied to one college because I didn't really care. I knew I could get into that college. That's another thing about me. Like, the only sport I ever played was track because I knew I could make it. I knew I wouldn't be kicked, not make it. I knew I didn't have to try out. I knew I would just be accepted. I never tried to push myself to do anything. That's why I applied to that college. I knew I'd get in, and one of my other friends, she had actually tried to get into another school, and she didn't get in. She was very upset. I'm like, who cares? They just go to the school I'm going to. But meanwhile, she's trying to work hard to get into that school. Like, that first year of college, she's trying to work hard to get to that next level. I think she's turning her back on me. She doesn't want to be with me anymore. But actually, that's how she wants to live her life. She's not an alcoholic. And I listened to a CD on the way up, kind of what an alcoholic is. And, you know, because people mention you're an alcoholic. Yeah, I know I'm an alcoholic. Or, you know, and it's like, well, what is an alcoholic? But later I found that out with my sponsor. I knew I had a problem later on in life after I got in a lot of trouble. But I wasn't in, I hadn't gotten in any trouble yet the first year of college. And I was coming to class hungover, breathing alcohol all over the teachers, all over everybody. All the rest of the students are trying to do the work and participate, and I'm just like a mess. My teacher's yelling at me. I'm like, why doesn't she like me? Maybe she doesn't like me because I'm coming to class hungover and drunk. And I don't really want to participate in this class. I'm just trying to just get by doing the minimum amount of work. Eventually, that did catch up to me because you're drinking every day, and the way I'm drinking, it's to oblivion, and I'm getting behind the wheel and getting a DUI. And that night, it was me just speeding out of Newark, which is a college town. And they have, like, borders, and the cops usually get you as you're leaving the town. So he got me. And now I know I'm thankful for all those incidents with the police because that's how God was working through my life. But that night, I didn't see it that way. I just wanted to get off. I wasn't drinking. You say you're not drinking anymore. They can smell it on you. And you're not passing any of the sobriety tests. And So I got the DUI, or I think I might have got a reckless alcohol related. I had a couple incidences with the police and driving while intoxicated. That was my first incident. I had to stop going to school, which helped me start drinking a lot more, because I didn't have to worry about school anymore. I think I got a job in between that. I was holding down the job. Somehow, a couple people loved me. Almost like family members. They gave me a chance, and they still are there for me. That one woman, she's a really good woman. She just was always there for me and always listened to me. And she didn't care if I got in trouble or what I did. She just didn't care. she was there for me. She knew my family, and she just, I guess, saw some kind of good in me, I guess. But she helped kind of get me a job and, you know, say, oh, she's all right, we can keep her on. But eventually they couldn't keep me on anymore. I was calling out too much, and they just couldn't keep me on. That's irresponsible. And so later on, I drinking all the time. I got caught again, and it was pretty bad this time. I was in Pennsylvania somewhere. I had no clue where I was. I had been at a wrestling match. Before the wrestling match, before it got started, I decided I was going to drink in the car. And then we come inside, yell at a whole bunch of people, embarrass my ex-boyfriend, and say, oh, I need the keys of your car. I need to get back in the car so I can drink some more. I get in the car thinking I'm just going to go in the car and sit and drink. I actually end up getting into the passenger side and driving. I don't know why, but I start driving them back roads, no clue where I am, making all the phone calls. Daddy, you know, I want to find me. I don't know where I am, you know. And he's like worried about me. What do you see? I'm like, I see a billboard and all back roads. And I'm like 2 hours away from my house. And so he couldn't really help me. And it didn't help that I was passing out behind the wheel and running into a telephone pole. That woke me up. I know a couple of people might have that experience because I've heard somebody else tell that story of a telephone pole or tree waking you up and deciding to continue driving and run into something else and pass out. And a couple of people see me. Like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. Like, normally if you see somebody pass out on the side of the road crash into it, like a snow pile, you're going to pull over and say, are you okay? And you're going to call the police. Because it's in the middle of the night, it's dark, and it's like somebody passed out of the wheel. There might be something wrong with them. But I said, just leave me alone. There's nothing wrong. Well, now, if I saw somebody like that, I would call the police. Because I would want them, the ambulance to come or someone to come. I wouldn't just leave them there. So eventually the police came. I was out. I didn't know what was going on. I think they had to pry the door open somehow because I wasn't letting anybody in the car. And they got me. I acted insane that night. I acted insane. I thought I was in a nightmare because they took me to the jail cell. And I didn't know where I was. I was in the middle of Pennsylvania. I didn't know where I was. I'm in a jail cell. I don't know these people. And I was flipping out. Going crazy, saying I'm going to kill myself, saying all these like insane things we do. And they had to put a camera on my cell for safety reasons because they didn't want to be responsible if I had done anything. I wasn't going to do anything to myself. I was just scared out of my mind and thought I was in a nightmare because I did it to myself again. I'm in a jail cell again because I decide to drink and act like somebody I'm not. That's not who I am, but this is what I choose to do. I drink. Even though the outcome's always the same, that insanity, I still do it every time. In the jail cell screamings, I'm going to kill myself. You know, I could have seen they told me I could have seen the judge that night, but since I was acting like insane, I had to stay for the weekend. And that was probably pretty good for me. You know, a little humility. You know what? I missed my mom in about 12 hours. And I missed my grandma and I missed everybody in about 12 hours. And my poor mother, what I put her through, I owe my mom a lot. My mom has been there for me always, and that was hard for her to handle. So my dad came and picked me up that weekend. And that was a nice feeling that my dad came to get me to communicate with him, because my poor mother, she's had to deal with him and me and my brothers. And, you know, feeling bad for somebody doesn't help, but she just couldn't handle it, you know. Hearing her daughter's in jail, you feel like a failure. And she's not. She's not a failure. I have a disease. I have an allergy. I'm an alcoholic. And it's not her fault how I react to alcohol. It's not her fault. So my dad picked me up, and that was a nice feeling to see him and communicate with him. And he kind of told me some stories. And you know, in my mind the whole time, I said, I'd never be like this. I would never do this, and he's coming to pick me up, you know, 20 years later. I'm right in the same situation he is. So he picks me up. After that, When he picked me up, the police officer sat down with me before I left, because he had seen me. He had seen how I was acting, screaming at himself, saying I'm going to kill myself, screaming at everybody. He had seen me, and after 2 days, he's like, you're a different person. You're not that person I saw 2 nights ago. You know, and I was like, hey, you know, I was probably still feeling it, feeling humble. I was humbled, I think, a little bit after that. Definitely not enough, but I was humbled after that. He advised me, you might want to check out AA. You might want to get a sponsor and start the steps. You might want to go to AA. So I was like, okay, I'll do whatever you say. I don't want to have to come back here, because when I left, they said, you probably have to come back here. You know, most people have to come back. And I was like, oh my God, I'll get a lawyer. I'll go to AA. So my ex-boyfriend was very upset with me too, because I had crashed his car that night too. Thank you. And luckily it was a rent a car. But still, the fact that I did that to him, and he was very, very good to me, and he put up with a lot of my crap. I couldn't be there for him. I didn't know why he didn't want to let me drink. I thought he was trying to control me, and he wasn't. You know, he knew that wasn't me, and the police officer knew it. After he saw me after a couple of days, he knew, like, who are you today? And so I went to AA. Pretty much going because I don't want to go back to jail. I don't want to go back there. Even though the ladies were nice there, I don't want to go back. I don't want to be in a controlled environment like that. They were not, it was not the experience that I thought it would have been. But it was, you know, very humbling, I guess the word would be, putting clothes on that aren't yours and taking a shower in front of someone. And it's kind of, I guess, wakes you up a little bit. But if you don't start the steps, if you don't get into AA and do the steps and be consistent, if you don't have the desire to stop, which I don't really think I did. So I came here because I didn't want to have to go back to jail. I came here, I was a miserable bee, and looking at everybody with my nose in the air because I got a job, I got a car, I'm getting ready to move out of my house. Like, I'm not like you people at all. And I just was very, very, very cocky. And that lasted a little while. I had a guy come up to me and said, we get a group of people together and we go out, we have fun. We don't drink or use. And I didn't understand that. Like, I thought that was weird to hang out with people and not do drugs or drink. I thought that was weird. But later I come to find out it's not weird. It's awesome. And it's stimulating. And you're hanging out with people that want to try to better this world, you know, and just show you how to do it. I didn't understand that then. I was very, very dry. I was very dry. I had mentioned something. Hey, lady, do you want to be my sponsor? She had told me I had too many sponsees. There was another woman. She introduced me to another woman. I think she emailed me once, and my court date was like the next day. So I went to court and with the lawyer that cost a lot of money, that probably I could have done what he did, but got the lawyer, and he helped me, you know, get off. I guess that was what was best. Sometimes getting in trouble helps us. So got the lawyer, got over that. That court date, they showed me photos of myself. I was passed out on the car, not looking like the way I looked that day. And it's amazing after you kind of stop drinking. Maybe my mental wasn't there, my spiritual wasn't there, but I did not look like that anymore. It was just like shocking to see myself like that, look like that. And just not very appealing to see myself like that. I thought it was good that they took photos, I guess. just see yourself, and that's why we don't close the door on the past. I wanted to say that too. We don't close the door on our past. We need to share that with others, especially when you're working one-on-one with girls. That's why we keep our four step, because we need to see what it really was like, what we were like. because it can go right back to that. Because we're alcoholic, we're going to be alcoholic till we die. And I had to realize that. I had to have these experiences. I had to have the proof for myself. Like, I had to know. I had to want to give up and have the desire to quit. After the court date, kind of stopped going to AA. I guess I just stopped because I was going like every night after work. Very miserable. The only thing I really heard was sponsor and steps. And I don't know if I was willing. I don't know if people were even doing what we do. What I don't want to say other people do different things in AA, but I don't know if that was going on at the place I was going to. Because some lady emailed me, that's not what my sponsor did this time around. She mentioned to me, open the big book and read the doctor's opinion. She didn't just hand me a big book and smile and say, you know, here's a big book, this will make you better. She opened it up and told me to read some of it and told me to call her. And maybe I wasn't ready, but this time around, people are talking about the steps. And it's extremely to talk about the steps, I think, when anybody shares or whenever there's a newcomer around. Because if they're ready to stop and they've had enough and they know they're done, and no one, if you're using excuses like, oh, so-and-so said something to me, so I'm not going there anymore. If you want to be sober, let that other person go back out. Let them go back out. Don't let them chase you out of here. You know, if you really want to be sober, that's what AA is for. And eventually, then you start sharing some hope with people. But until then, you share that you're suffering and you would like a sponsor and like to do the steps. And see what happens. Give it a try. Like they say, give it a try. I had to know. I know now what being dry is. I know now what being dry is. Dry is just not drinking. And that's it. It's having no spiritual connection. It's totally self-righteousness. It's totally thinking you're doing it all on your own. And you know what happened? One night a drink sounded good. You know, I was going to bars and I was going to bands and stuff and saying I'm not going to drink, and I didn't drink, but I was invited to a party afterwards and the drink sounded okay. I just had one, you know, and I think I had like one or two that night. I'm like, I did good. See, I started later. I'll start later at night. So then I only have like a couple. But eventually a week later I was drinking and driving again, treating people like not very well. During my dry period I wasn't treating people very well either. I was like picking a family member each night to yell at, each day to tell them what they need to change in their life. And I still find myself doing that sometimes today. And I know that is dry behavior. And that's not how I want to treat my mother or my brothers or anyone. I want to be loving. And how would I treat another suffering, sick alcoholic? I wouldn't treat them like that. We're not supposed to preach. We're not supposed to tell people what to do. We're supposed to share this. And if this is what they want to do, this is what they can do. But we're not supposed to demand. It's just attraction. You know, it's supposed to be attractive. And it was attractive to me when I came to that speaker meeting. I was very attractive. And someone introduced me to my sponsor. And she said, would you like me to take you through the steps? And you know what? I guess I was ready. You know, I said, yes. I wasn't ready before. I was ready because before I heard all that stuff, and I was happy people were talking about these steps. And when I was ready, I knew what I needed to do when I came in. I was not fooling around. I was looking for a sponsor and wanted to do the steps. And luckily I found somebody that was doing the steps and not telling and nothing else, doing the steps out of the big book. Because I don't know what some other people do. I have no clue, but I'm lucky I found my sponsor. I know that. Because I hear some of the other stuff that people are telling their sponsors to do, and I'm like, that is not part of this program. The people telling, oh, well, they went through the steps too fast. What are you talking about? If they're suffering and they want help, why shouldn't this be offered to them? Who am I to linger it over their head if they're ready and they're moving along? You know, we're supposed to use this to share with other people. We're not supposed to get it and then keep it. If somebody wants it, it's our responsibility to share with them. That's our one responsibility to share with another suffering alcoholic. That's how I stay sober. You know, that's what helps me too. And I tell the girls that when I'm talking on the phone with them, I say, you're helping me too. Like, I don't ever lie and, like, think I'm, like, God and I'm, like, helping everybody. They're helping me, too. And we help each other and try to make it not about us. So when I came back around again after my last DUI, which luckily there was enough period of time in between those DUIs that I was able to get a first offender's, because I would have gone to jail. And if that was what was meant to be, I was ready for it, because I had came to AA 2 days after that last UI. That night, I got pulled over the last UI and said, okay, I'm done. I'm done, God. Before the police officer came, and said, I'm done. I'm going to get a DUI. I'm okay with it. And I'm going to get help. I'm going to go to AA. And so the cop came. I got the DUI. And I tried to be calm. You know, for the most part, I know I was intoxicated, but I tried to be calm and just be polite to the officer, because he's just doing his job, you know. And then after 2 days of feeling pretty bad, because I couldn't even go the next day, I was so beat up. After 2 days, January 21st, I was in the first AA meeting, and they said the date. And today's date is January 18th, 2010. And they said the date, and that stuck in my head, and I'm like, there must be a reason why they're saying the date today. So I remembered it, because they said, remember the first day you come in, that's your sobriety date. And it just started being, just sitting there listening, because I was done. I was so beat up. I was done. Whatever you got to say, I'm listening, because you people were here for me 6 years ago. And you're still here now, you know, and you're still here for me. So I'm going to listen this time and not treat you like I'm better than you, because I know I'm not. Because I'm right back where I started before. So I was listening. And there was some hope in those rooms. And people say stuff about the clubhouses. Well, I'm happy that clubhouse was there, because I didn't have a job, because I had got fired, because people were tired of my shit stuff, because I wasn't coming to work anymore. I was calling out of work. Oh, yeah, I can take the smoke break. Oh, yeah, you can have that for free. Oh, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, just, I had started out good. I got promoted. But eventually, the drug alcohol takes over you. And it's no more responsibility. It's no more caring about others. It's caring about you. And in reality, somebody can't employ you like that. You know, they can't employ somebody who doesn't want to work or do their job. What example is that to show others? The other girl that is working hard, this girl's getting paid more than you, and she's not doing what she's supposed to do, and you're actually doing her work. They couldn't put up with me anymore. So I didn't have a job when I came in here. Somehow I was getting by before, you know, people providing for your addiction, your alcoholism. And I just didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't want to live like that anymore. I wasn't happy. You know, you think you're happy if you're fulfilling that obsession or that phenomenon of craving. You're feeling it, but you're not happy. It has control over you. You're not happy. You're not happy. You're miserable. I was miserable. I wanted to be dead. I didn't want to be alive. There was no good feelings in my life. I didn't have any laughter in my life. I didn't know what laughter was for a very long time. And I come in here and I laugh, and I'm so thankful for laughter, that gift, that people that can make you laugh, you know, and that they care. They care enough to make you laugh, you know. I didn't have that. So I was listening, and I wasn't sitting with my nose up in the air anymore thinking I'm better than anybody. I was going to meetings. The afternoon, night, any meeting. You want to go to this meeting? Sure. You want to go to this meeting after this meeting? Sure. You want to go to the diner? Yeah, sure. I'll go anywhere. And luckily, I still had my license. That hadn't been taken away yet, because I hadn't gone to court yet. So I was able to be going to these meetings and meeting people and becoming a part of the fellowship and listening to some of this big book stuff. It made a lot of sense to me. And listening and getting active. And then eventually someone invited me to my home group, South College. And I listened to a really wonderful speaker that night. And I always forget her name. She's from Philadelphia. And she's got, like, tattoos on her face. And she's awesome. Like, she is awesome. And she's like, how can you really reach God if you're putting, like, a drink? Pretty much she said, like, how can you have an experience, a relationship with God when there's a drink or drug between you? You know, when you run into that alcohol, how can you have a relationship with God? Because you didn't run to God. You ran to the alcohol. And now when I have pain, I run to God. Like, I don't want to run to that shit anymore. I know where that leads me. That leads me to more pain. And the delusion, thinking that won't lead to more pain, that's a delusion. And that's why we have sponsors, and that's why we have friends that are doing the same also, to keep us in check and to remind us. And I realized, what's wrong with wanting to be happy, you know? Like, you don't always have to be in pain or feel miserable. You can have joy in your life, and you know, I know other people are going through pain. You know, like you know, just recently, like Haiti, that series, and I think about that, and that grounds me. You know, not everybody is as lucky as us, but God has a reason for that too. And I talked to my mom, and she's like, as you get older, you're not as sensitive to things. You see that God did that for a reason. There's a reason for everything. So I know one of my friends is actually going over there to help out, and that's amazing. And I look up to her a lot for that. But my life has changed a lot because of people in these rooms that were here for me every time I decided I wanted to come back. And now I know that, hey, if they were consistent and those are familiar faces, I need to be consistent. And I need to be consistent with, you know, at least one group, you know. But I'm consistent with a couple groups. And my life's very fulfilling, and I meet a lot of people through this program. And another huge thing, of course, the steps, which I've been talking about, which I do with my sponsor. And I'm always afraid, like, I won't say the right thing when I'm with my sponsee. I won't do the right thing when it comes to the steps, because I'm not the best with words. I don't have a large vocabulary of big words. I mean, I'm working on that. I've actually just started school, which I never, ever thought I'd be back in school. I never, ever thought I'd be back in school. I thought I would just be in this messed up relationship that I was in before, and we were just poison to each other. But God gave me some kind of grace, and I took it. I took it, and I asked for help, and I started listening to what people were telling me and not turn my nose at them and say, you know what, they're happy, and they seem like a good member of society, and they're alcoholic, and they have a relationship with God, and they showed me how to pray through the steps. I learned how to pray again. You know, in the end, before I got my last view, I did say, God, I know you're going to be the only one that's going to help me out of this. I know no more drugs are going to help me. I know, like, you probably relationship with you is going to be the only thing that's going to help me. And I would journal and write, you know, write about addiction and write about how messed up things were and how, you know, how messed up everything was and how I wish I could pray and I want to go to church, but I just wasn't doing it. I wasn't there. I liked the idea of it. Through the steps, it helped me find God. And through the steps, you continue doing them, your relationship with God would grow. And someone told me that before, and I was like, my relationship with God is awesome. It is not going to change. It is not going to grow. And you go through some things with God, and you get through them with God, your relationship with God changes. Because you're like, wow, He's still there. And I know God, that's what's been my experience. God is something that's greater than me. You know, I don't understand God. I don't want to understand God. That's a huge job that I don't want to take on. But I know He's there, and I know in His time things will happen for me, not on my time. Because alcoholics, we want it now. And if we don't get it now, then we're through, then I'm just going to have it my way. And I think Tom Flynn's always like, well, I'll show you. I'll go back out and I'll show you. And I'm like, who are you showing? You're the one going back out. Why don't you stick around? But I guess you can't tell somebody to stick around if they don't have a desire to stop. Because I didn't before. I didn't have a desire to stop. So I really don't think anybody was going to change that attitude. I guess I had to go out and have more experience to realize I was. So she told me to read the doctor's opinion, and personally, my brain was mush. I couldn't really absorb much when I read. So she sat down and explained some things to me, and I don't remember exactly what she said, but it made sense. I mean, anything she said, she would. The way she carried herself and the way she talked to me about the history of AA. And I'm like, do I need to write this down? Am I going to remember this? She's like, no, you don't need to write it down. You know, just about the history. And that we weren't the first ones that wanted to stop drinking. You know, there were people like the Washingtonians
They wanted to stop. They were a group of guys that I understand with because I was sitting in the bar. They were like, why the heck am I here with these guys? That's exactly what they're like, why are we still doing this? Why do we continue to do this? We should be home with our family. I should be running my business. My liver's failing. Why am I doing this? And that's where it got started, like in the 1800s. So it's just knowing that there's more. There's always more than what you think. And you can always seek more. So that little taste, as I got more time and as I started going to meetings, as I started listening to people, I want to seek myself. I want to go on the internet. And I want to, you know, read up on the Washingtonians and Dr. Silkworth. And I want to get Emmett Fox's book and read Sermon on the Mount. It's like you seeking it what makes it cool, because it's your decision to do these things. And people stimulating that idea or that feeling that I want to know. I want to know so I can share. I can share like you, like the way you share with me. I want to share like that. I want to inform people, and sometimes people don't want to hear it. And you know you're just talking to a wall. And, you know, in any way, I guess, they're kind of helping me because I'm hearing myself and realizing that I can explain these things to people. And I can do this. I can do this, you know. If they just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you know, you'll get there with God's help. Through the steps, I found God. I found out what an alcoholic was, which for some reason I just knew I was an alcoholic. But you find out what it is through the doctor's opinion. You find out it's an allergy. You find out, like the one girl says, it's like peanuts. You're allergic. So people are allergic to peanuts. They don't eat peanuts, you know. But people are allergic to alcohol, we continue to drink it. Why? Because we have an obsession. We have a craving for it, you know? Which I said I was listening to that on the way up, and I'm like, oh, this is good stuff. It's a guy just talking about what an alcoholic is. I'm very passionate about it. And, like, why do I keep doing this? That's what we say. Why do I keep doing this? I know, Mom, I know. I'm going to get help tomorrow, you know? But I don't get help tomorrow. I keep doing it. I may stop for a week. I may stop for a year. You know, this is probably the longest time of sobriety I had, like, consistently in this program with God's help, knowing it's God. Knowing any time when I start getting self-righteous or selfish, I try to talk to God and say, no, God, I don't want it. I don't want this dry stuff. I don't want to be like this. I know you're the one who's keeping me sober. And I know you're keeping me sober, hopefully, so I can help others. Because most of us, the things we've done, we probably shouldn't be alive. You know, like, seriously, we should really think, I mean, we're miracles. I really do think that. When people say that, like, that's gay, I don't think it is. I think we are miracles. You know, and take advantage of that. And look up to, and people in this program that have been doing this for like 20 years consistently. You know, I thought when I first came in, I didn't think I was going to get a year. I didn't think I'd ever even get to that point. And, you know, and now I'm like, it's like nothing. They say it's like scratching the surface. That's really what it is. I feel like I've only scratched the surface. I feel like I can still learn so much more. And that's what makes this program so much fun, because you can learn and you can grow. And you go through pain and it's okay. You got people there that want to be your friends and care about you and want to help you get through it. But they don't want you to feel like a victim. They want to give you suggestions or direction on how to solve your problem, and not say, oh, it's all right. I know your wife does that to you. No, say, well, what have you been doing lately? Or what was your part in that? You know? Or with your boyfriend, you know, what's your part in that? And I started step one, and they said, you know, you're powerless and your life's unmanageable. And for a while, I was just saying, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol, and they said, there's a second part to that, your life's unmanageable. And yes, my life was very unmanageable. I didn't have a life. Yeah, but I didn't have a life. My life was nothing. I had no joy in my life. Two, I came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I was insane, and I knew God was going to help me with that. I knew that was the only thing that could help me anymore, because I tried it all. I tried all kinds, you know, I tried alcohol, I tried pills. I tried anything that would be easy and an easy fix. You know, like, I'm sure most of us in this room, that we want the easy fix. But we don't want to do any work. We don't want to take any action. We just want our lives to be fixed. Well, I just quit my job and quit everything and sell this and sell that. But that's not solving your problem. You need to deal with your life. you know, and you need to start cleaning up your past. So two, I knew I wasn't sane. And I can still get insane sometimes if I forget who's in charge. And three, I do that every day. I do step three every day. I read that prayer, and it says you can kind of make it up in your own words too, which I do. And it's pretty much like, God, what do you want me to do today? Because I don't want to do me. Like, I don't want to do me because that's just trouble. And I've been pretty given a lot of gifts this past year, a lot of gifts. And gifts that I didn't think were gifts, but now I know they are. And responsibilities too, you know. And that happens too. And I'm taught, you know, you need to be financially supporting also. Helping in AA is amazing. And God does take care of you as you take care of His kids, you know. But we also need to help our families out too. And be there for our family. And I'm realizing that now I need to be home sometimes with my family, because I have other alcoholics in my family besides myself. I need to show them how to live. I need to show them, not just by telling them, I need to show them by example and stop telling them what to do, because I don't know what they need to do. I need to show them through example and be continuous with it, because they've seen me get sober for a little while and start get stuff and get the good job, and then they see me fall down. No, and then they get the phone call at night, your daughter's in jail. Your daughter's in the hospital, you know, like, so they can see us for a while, get good, and then they know, oh, you know what happens later, though. So we need to be continuous with this every day. And I do that third step prayer every day, and that was probably the most amazing thing, doing that third step. I definitely had a spiritual experience with that. Like, I didn't have any cares in the world after I did it, and that started to change, you know, after a while. I still feel that way a lot, but that was an spiritual experience after I did step three. I think step three is amazing, and it keeps us grounded and humble when we do that, because it gets us out of ourselves and thinking about somebody else and how can I help somebody else. And that's how we should be living, because God's going to take care of us. And step four was doing your inventory. You get a pen and paper, and you ask for God's help, and you do it. And you do it out of the big book. And you don't do it your own way. You do the three columns, you know, resentments, fears, and your sex inventory. And you do it as your sponsor tells you to do it. Do it out of the book. And then step five, you share it with God, yourself, and another human being. And God should always be number one through all these steps. You're never alone. And that was huge with my sponsor. She's by the book, but she's more by God. And more through prayer. And that God's going to be with you through all of this. So don't be afraid, you know. And so that's what I did, because I put my fourth step off for a while. And then I finally was like, you know what? My home group members were like, what step are you on again? And luckily they were like that, because they actually cared if I was doing the steps. I had some fear, but then one day I prayed and I just did it. And step five, I sat with her. And for some reason, I just felt very comfortable around her. You know, our sponsors are human too, but I just felt very comfortable around her. She's very gentle, and sometimes I feel like I need to work on that gentleness. I get very passionate and loud and fast, and people have reminded me, like, you know, just remember God's in charge. She's very good at that. And I shared it with her, and she showed me my part in things. Before we started sharing my stuff, she shared some of her stuff. And she shared, like, oh, well, I didn't ever think I was selfish, or I was, you know, I'm not selfish. When I do something for you, I'm a nice person. I do stuff for people. That's what she was telling me. And she's like, little did I know, when I was making those cookies for somebody, I expected something in return. And that's kind of what we find out in the steps, that are we doing things because we genuinely just want to give, or are we doing it because we want something in return, we expect something back? And she showed me, you know, where I was selfish, and where I need to take action, and through my fears and the sex inventory, which I think is very big in this program, and it's hard to talk about that, how. For myself, as an alcoholic, can't really have a healthy relationship because it's usually about me and I usually want to put alcohol above anything else. I realize now that a relationship with God first, and maybe being with somebody that has God first, and you're willing to grow along spiritual lines, you'll have more things in common, and things will work out if you both have God in common. And that was really neat, to find out that I could have maybe a healthy relationship. I just thought that was really neat about these steps. And I know resentments are huge too, and they can kill us, and I know they can, because I can hold a resentment and not even realize I'm holding one. And just let it go and just love that person. And how can you be helpful to them? Not just pray for them, because somebody's like, you're not just praying for them, it's how can you be helpful to someone that you might have a resentment against? And it makes it go away. Praying helps too, but taking action also helps a lot. And the sex inventory is really neat, and everybody knows that's on page 69. And it's just some good information for us. Because we use that as a whole too. Because I know I do. And that's the only page I that memorized. It was helpful. And some of these other books, too, talk about... I think I remember reading something, a new pair of glasses or something. I read, like, maybe a couple pages out of that, and it says something. If you're with someone and you genuinely care about them, and you're no longer just with them because you want stuff from them, or you're just looking at what you can take from them, you're like, I care about you, and, you know, I love you. And that's very important. That's something you get also, the gift of the steps and helping other people. And when people are like, well, when did I have a boyfriend? And they said, wait a year. I said, get through the steps and start helping other people. You know, and then see what happens. I just found that interesting. And they said, do the sex ideal. I did that later after I did the steps. I did that with two other girls, and we sat down, we prayed, and we read it, and we wrote some of the things we might want out of a relationship. And also, what should be expected of us. It's not just what I want. Well, what do I want? I want this, I want that, I want that. Well, what should be expected of you? What are you going to give in the relationship? It's both. And then I met somebody else that said you can do that with all your relationships. With your mother, your father, your brothers, you know, employees, or... the people you work with, anybody, your relationships with people, we don't know how to do this because we're so into ourselves that we don't know how to give and be a good friend to somebody just to be a good friend to somebody because we think that's weird to call a new person up and say, hey, how you doing? Because that's weird, even though they know nobody and they're suffering and probably no one's called them in a while because I know I didn't have any friends calling me in the end. I didn't have anybody care where I was. So why can't we do that? Anyway, relationships are very important. And what are we given? And are we genuinely showing unconditional love? Which we're human. We're not always going to be able to do that. We're human. But it's a matter of practicing these things. And we get better at them. 6, my character defects. I feel like 6 is kind of like becoming aware of what your character defects are. So then you can ask God, 7, to remove them. And more like becoming aware of what these things are. Most of them are based on being selfish and self-centered. And me, 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 and I do it all, and God hasn't helped me one bit when He has. And it's just becoming aware what we can use. Someone made me aware of what gossip, talking about people, like getting high off gossiping about people. We do it, but do we need to become more aware that we're doing it too much and that it's not healthy to be sitting talking about this person that may be suffering right now. It's what can we be doing better with our time than talking about somebody else? That's definitely a character defect that we're not aware of sometimes. We're not even aware we're doing it. So it's becoming aware and then asking God to remove it. And 8 is writing down all the people I've harmed in my financial amends, which I'm trying to work on my financial amends right now, just trying to get financially together. And making amends. My mom was, of course, the first one and the most amazing. And we sat for a while, and I couldn't believe what came out of her mouth. That was definitely a spiritual experience. I couldn't believe what she talked about and kind of what I put her through. She didn't make me feel bad, but we talked. And I think it actually got her interested in the program. She's not an alcoholic, but she suffers too with things. She has a spiritual malady, I believe, but I can't tell her that. She has to find out on her own. But she's reading Sermon on the Mount right now, and I talked to her about the steps. And there is an informal way of doing these things for people that are suffering and may be interested in the steps. So yeah, I think it got her interested, and it got me and my mom a lot closer. And, you know, in my home, there are people suffering with this disease, and they don't want to get sober right now. I can be there for them. But my mom, who is there all the time, I just feel like we've gotten a lot closer, too, because I've admitted to things and just admitted I'm powerless and I need help. And it's gotten us a lot closer. And 10, continue to take personal inventory of myself, where I'm resentful, fearful, selfish, and dishonest. I do that every day, too, because I am those things every day. I'm sure I'm at least one of them every day. Because I'm human, and it's okay, but I need to do something about it, not sit on it, because I will drink, because I'm an alcoholic, and I know that now. So I do that every day, and I ask, you know, if I did somebody harm, I have to make up for it. I pray to get, for God to remove it. I talk to somebody about it. I make amends if I need to, and then I go help another alcoholic, which is huge. Helping other alcoholics will get you out of yourself, and being in ourselves is not a good thing. And somebody said yesterday he put a sign on his head for entertainment purposes only. Because it's true. When we start doing that, we ain't getting much done. I'm sitting around thinking about what I need to do. I'm just sitting around thinking about what I need to do. Why don't you just go start your day and get started and not be just sitting around, well, how am I going to do it? How am I going to get all this done? Why don't you get started? You know, say your prayers and get started on your day. And don't sit in your head and entertain it. Though 11 is important, prayer and meditation. We do need to meditate and reflect on things. And have routines. Have a morning and nightly routine. For me, that's helped me a lot. You know, when I have that routine in the morning, I have that routine at night. That's just what I do. And as a default, things aren't so bad. As a default, I have a relationship with God that is awesome. We need to do these things, and the directions for that is in the big book. And you can also explore, I've been told, you know, other ways to meditate. There's all different ways to meditate. In prayer, you can make up your own prayers, or you can say set prayers. And I do a little bit of both. You know, because sometimes, example, saying Hail Mary or Our Father over and over again can be therapeutic and can be very helpful because it gets it out of your head. And I have had spiritual experiences doing that too. That's just an example for something to do. Sometimes saying a set prayer over and over again can be very helpful. And 12, helping others. I pretty much got that idea as soon as I walked in the doors. That's what I was supposed to be doing. So I didn't have steps yet, but I had a car at that point. And so I was able to give you a ride. And I had a phone, and I was able to talk to you on the phone, and I was able to go to meetings and be there and be helpful. You know, I got that pretty soon, and that's actually a major point we're supposed to share with a newcomer. Helping others is going to help you. So I was doing that from the beginning, and as I started the steps, I started to realize I could help people, take people through the steps. And I didn't think I was qualified. And I would call my sponsor. I got a new sponsee for you. And she's like, Aaron, you know you can be helping these people too. And I'm like, no, I can't. I was scared. I was scared out of my mind to help the first girl. I had no clue. I'm like, I don't remember anything. I don't know anything. And I had that book with me every time. I had that book with me. Whether I was reading a page out of it, and I didn't know what I was doing. But maybe that girl, maybe she was listening. Maybe she wasn't. You know? Because a lot of times people don't want to get sober, you know, but we need to have our hand there if they want it. And be practicing these spiritual principles and be willing to grow along spiritual lines. And I think, I guess it's like, yeah, definitely past the time. Okay.